Moncrief on News Talk.
First, though, grotesque, unbelievable, bizarre and unprecedented, or gooboo, was first coined by the late Conor Cruise O'Brien and referred to a particular set of circumstances in the early 1980s. You can't help but wonder what O'Brien would make of our world today and whether he might feel that his acronym might need to be replaced by something else. Bizarre has become almost normal. Gooboo has just been included in the Oxford English Dictionary as a colloquial term, an adjective denoting a political scandal or fiasco. Pat Leahy from the Irish Times is the host of a podcast that relates the story of gooboo. Pat, got afternoon.
Hiya, Sean. Harry McGee.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
People often confuse me with Pat. We're both absolutely stunning, tall, dark and handsome and good looking.
Yes, my apologies, Harry. Who was Malcolm MacArthur?
Malcolm MacArthur was this diffident, dandy, aristocratic guy who was of Scottish antecedent, but he grew up in County Meath in a big house, inherited a lot of money in his early 20s and was a kind of a figure around the Dublin social scene in the 1970s, drinking in the fashionable bars like the Bailey and other hostelries in the city centre, and dressing in a very raffish way with kind of dicky bows and with scarves and kind of tweeds, and kind of perfected his image of a kind of an academic. And of course he had a cut glass accent as well. The difficulty for Malcolm MacArthur was that he never really worked, and by the time he hit his mid-30s he ran out of money, and he was living in Tenerife at the time with his partner and their young child, and he didn't really want to enter the world of work. So he came up with this harebrained scheme, and that's the kindest way of putting it, Sean, because it was just completely and utterly crazy. He was going to come back to Ireland. He'd read in the newspapers about the IRA carrying out armed raids around the country with impunity, seemingly, and he decided he was going to do some of the same. The difficulty he had was that he had no criminal experience. He had lived his life in a gilded cage and he wasn't very good with people. But he plotted a plan. He came back. He disguised himself. He lived in a B&B in Dunleary for a month, grew a beard, got these ridiculous kind of Mr. Magoo glasses, started wearing tweeds and a deerstalker hat, and started plotting up a plan. So he needed to get a car, he thought, and a gun. And he was prepared to kill to do so, which showed that he was completely devoid of any human emotion or empathy. So on the 22nd of July, he went to the Phoenix Park looking for a car. And unfortunately, there was a young nurse called Bridie Gargan from County Meath who had just finished her shift in St James's Hospital. She was sunbathing in the park. He came upon her. He tried to steal her car. He pushed her into the car. She panicked and he produced a lump hammer, and he essentially assaulted her to within an inch of her life, and she died a few days later. He then made good his mistake. He went down to Edenderry. He had replied to an ad in the Evening Press and met a young farmer there called Donald Dunn. Himself and Donald went out to the shooting range in Rathangan, and Donald Dunn demonstrated his up-and-over shotgun to Malcolm MacArthur, who promptly took it and shot Donald Dunn at point-blank range and killed him, and then stole his car and made his way back into Dublin. So this, very soon the Gardaí connected both murders. They knew what the person looked like, they knew what he spoke like, they knew his manner, but they had no idea who he was. He could have arrived on Mars, and took them several weeks to discover his identity. So he went on, then he had his gun and he decided that he was going to carry out a robbery. So he went out to Cliney, and he arrived at the house of a former American diplomat called Harry Beeling, who was a very wealthy man, lived in a really nice house in Cliney. He came in, introduced himself, and then produced a shotgun, and they spoke for a couple of hours. Harry Beeling had had some experience with the CIA and knew that his life was in danger. So he picked
I think the gun probably was a clue.
But it was almost like a scene from a James Bond movie, because Malcolm MacArthur sat cross-legged with a gun across his legs, sipping G&Ts and reminiscing about parties in the 1970s. And poor old Harry Beeling was saying, what's happening here? So he went upstairs on the pretext of getting his checkbook. The boat went upstairs. And as they were going down the stairs, he bolted from halfway down, ran down the stairs, ran out the front door, ran down the road and made good his mistake. And he was able to give a very good description of the man. He couldn't remember his name for the life of him, couldn't remember who he was. But the funny thing that happened the next day, and it showed you how disconnected Malcolm MacArthur was, he rang up the guards and identified himself as Malcolm MacArthur and said it was a prank gone wrong. Meanwhile, Harry Beeling had put the guards on to a woman who used to go to his parties. And when the guards described the person to her, she immediately said, "This is Malcolm MacArthur." So then they had to try to figure out who Malcolm MacArthur was. And eventually they found out that he was this man about town. He used to go to opera, to drama, to restaurants and fashionable bars in the 1970s, including the infamous Bartley Dunn's pub, which is no longer with us. And they also discovered that he was very good friends with a man called Patrick Connolly. And Patrick Connolly was a very well-to-do lawyer, senior counsel, very wealthy, and a great friend of Charlie Haughey's. He had represented Charlie Haughey during the arms trial, and he was appointed Attorney General in 1982. And the government in 1982 was a Fianna Fáil government led by Charles Haughey, a ramshackle government minority, surviving from week to week, but it had survived until the summer. Charlie Haughey had gone away on his holidays. Patrick Connolly was about to go away on his holidays. He was very wealthy. He was going to take the Concorde to New York and then from there to go and do a visit of the southern states of America. So Malcolm MacArthur arrived on his door after trying to kill Harry Beeling and asked could he stay for a few days, and Patrick Connolly said certainly. So Patrick Connolly actually hosted Malcolm MacArthur for well over a week. But by which time the guards were beginning to kind of close the circle, and they began to put Patrick Connolly's apartment in Dalkey under observation. And sure enough, they saw Malcolm MacArthur there. So they pounced. Patrick Connolly arrived as they were arresting him. And he said, "Malcolm, I don't know what this is, but I can tell you this. You are on your own." Patrick Connolly was determined that he was going to go on his holidays the next day, irrespective of the fact that a man had been arrested for the two most notorious murders of the 1980s in his apartment. He rang Charlie Haughey in Inishvickalon. The line was not very good, which is probably a euphemism for saying that Charlie Haughey had probably a little bit of drink taken,
right,
by which time Patrick Connolly made the call. And Patrick Connolly, either Patrick Connolly failed to convey to him the import of what had happened. Haughey thought he was just ringing him as a courtesy to say that the man had been arrested. Charlie Haughey said, "Thanks very much indeed, bon voyage." But he didn't realise that the man who had been arrested was a really close friend of Patrick Connolly's and had been arrested in his apartment. And Patrick Connolly went off on his holidays the next day. The Department of Justice officials were hounded by the media the next day. Why has Patrick Connolly fled? They eventually got through to Haughey. Haughey realised the import of it and immediately tried to summon Connolly back, but Connolly wouldn't come back. So this became an international story, and Patrick Connolly was portrayed as a fugitive from justice, and there was some all kinds of conspiracy theories happened. And Peter Murta, the journalist who covered this, was telling me when I was doing the podcast, he said to me, "You know, if social media had been around at the time, it would have just spontaneously
combusted yes,
and killed itself." So it was huge. So poor Patrick Connolly had to come back. He then had to proffer his resignation to Haughey, because even though he hadn't really done anything wrong, it was such a scandal he had to go. And then Charlie Haughey held a press conference to explain it all. He came back from his holidays and he met a very hostile media. Ironically, of all the things that Charlie Haughey did in his career, he was completely blameless for this. Mm. It had nothing to do with him, Gov. And as he tried to explain it, he used some very colourful descriptive adjectives. He talked about grotesque mischance, a bizarre circumstances, unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And this, what had happened, was unprecedented. And a week later, his arch enemy, Conor Cruise O'Brien, who was writing a column either for The Indo or The Times at the moment, I can't remember at the moment which one it was, wrote a column in which he brought all those adjectives together and he created an acronym called GUBU. And forever after, GUBU was the word that was used to describe the particular chaos of Irish politics, a mischance or a mishap or a deliberate mistake or the kind of the cock-ups that are so familiar in Irish politics. And I'm really glad that it's been exported, because it's been a really commonly used term in Irish politics since the 1980s, and it's still even used today from time to time, even though the common memory of it is has probably receded a little bit. But I was over in the UK a couple of years ago covering the Tory infighting following the resignation of several prime ministers. And I was thinking GUBU would have been a perfect acronym or adjective to describe that. Their words are kind of psychodrama and omni-shambles. And then they have a couple of more coarse words that describe it as well. But I actually thought that GUBU would have been the word that would have perfectly described what was happening to the Tories at the time.
And did the Malcolm MacArthur saga, did it have enough? Because he was only hanging on by his fingertips anyway.
I think it precipitated the fall. The government came back in September, but by October it was gone. And I think the scandal of this was just, you know, a death by a thousand cuts. I think it really damaged the credibility of that government. The Attorney General had resigned, the country's top law officer. There was still kind of lots of questions being asked. People were very unhappy about the way the government had handled the whole thing. So I think it did. It wasn't perhaps the main ingredient that led to the collapse of the government, but it certainly contributed to it.
Yeah. And the Attorney General, even though he didn't do anything illegal or wrong, one could accuse him of a lapse of judgment, perhaps. To go on his holidays directly after something.
Yes, that was his main. You know, he was a senior lawyer. He knew the law intimately. He knew the extent of the charges that were being laid against Malcolm MacArthur. But I think just the attraction of travelling by Concorde at the time cost £2,500.
Yeah,
you know, you can imagine. I mean, that was well above what anybody would earn in a month, and probably for a lot of people what they would earn in 6 months. So he didn't want to forego his chance of going on the Concorde, and that might have blinded him a little bit to the consequences. So he should have foregone his holidays and stayed at home. But even then, he might have had difficulty in surviving, because the fact that one of the country's most notorious murderers was arrested in his flat and had been in his flat for several weeks, had been to Croke Park with him to see an All-Ireland semi-final in hurling, because Patrick Connolly was a huge GAA fan, and had also been driven around in the state car. So all of those would have probably led to his resignation. But the fact that he had decided to go really cemented that, Sean.
Does it say something about, well, maybe it says something about Ireland in general, but you have, you know, the Taoiseach back on his privately owned Ireland, and the Attorney General travelling around in Concorde, and posh boys with no money deciding, I know, I'll be a bank robber.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a level of kind of delusion there, or separation from reality.
Probably entitlement as well. The old English saying, it's the rich what gets the pleasure, it's the poor what gets the blame, you know. So, I think there's an element of that in it as well. I mean, each of them, you know, lived very ostentatious lifestyle. The funny thing is that MacArthur had started like that. The big house in County Meath, the vast lands, the huge wealth. But he had kind of gone down. The trajectory had gone downwards for him. Whereas with Haughey, it had gone the other way. He'd started in a small council flat in Donnycarney. His father had been invalided out of the army and was an invalid, essentially, for all of Haughey's childhood. And he had, by dint of all the things that Haughey did, had ended up...
That's another segment.
Had ended up in a Gandon-designed mansion in Kinsale. So that was kind of, you could see the sliding doors effect, I think, might have been in effect there, Sean.
Wearing beautiful shirts, of course. Harry McGee is a political correspondent with the Irish Times, host of that GUBU podcast, also the author of a best-selling book on the same subject. Harry.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.